Hi, I'm Cassie Friday, a doctoral student at the University of Kentucky. In this episode of A-Minder, which is my first one to host, I'll be presenting abstracts that propose various therapeutic strategies that target the immune system in Alzheimer's disease. So drug discovery is a huge area in the field of neurodegenerative research, and both naturally occurring compounds and pharmaceutical approaches are included in the abstracts that I will present after this short introduction of our podcast.
Welcome to A-Minder, a podcast where we summarize the latest publications on Alzheimer's disease for you, so you can spend more time doing awesome research. For every month, you'll find a series of episodes by theme, and each comes with a bibliography. Whether you're in the lab, on the bus, or cooking your meal, we hope you find this podcast useful and accessible.
Thank you for tuning in. First, I need to provide a disclaimer that the information presented in this podcast, like all episodes of A-Minder, are based on the most recent peer-reviewed research in the field. The summaries are made only on the abstracts, and I will be giving information about each publication and their corresponding bibliography numbers as we go through. So you can find the bibliographies in the episode notes and read the papers in their entirety if you're interested and you want to learn more. And I'm breaking this presentation into many themes within therapeutic strategies. So the first abstracts will cover the microbiome, and then I'll present abstracts targeting the NF-kappa-beta signaling pathway. Next, you'll hear summaries of abstracts looking at sexual dimorphism with some interesting gender effects in the results. And then following will be naturally occurring treatment options and pharmaceutical approaches. So first, with the microbiome. These first couple of abstracts originate from medical centers in China and focus on the gut microbiome as a therapeutic approach to treating Alzheimer's disease. The first paper is titled, Transfer of Tumor-Bearing Mice Intestinal Flora Can Ameliorate Cognition in Alzheimer's Disease Mice. The first author is Hong, and the last author is Zhu. They are affiliated with the Daxing Research Institute, and this was published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. For this paper in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease, this group from Beijing shows the potential of fecal microbiota transfers from mice with tumors to those with cognitive dysfunction with the hope of reducing cognitive impairment. Mice were tested using the Morris water maze and object recognition tests to assess their cognitive function after fecal floral transplants. The microbiota from both wild type and tumor-harboring mice were transplanted into mice with Alzheimer's disease by a gavage method. They used thioflavin T staining, Western blot, and 16S RNA sequencing to determine the effects of fecal flora transplantation in AD. The APP-PS1 AD mouse model was used, and this received a fecal transplant that improved their short-term memory and cognitive abilities compared to the control group. And staining showed that amyloid beta plaques in the hippocampus were actually lower in the fecal transplant mice compared to controls, and their plasma inflammatory factors were regulated. So in the AD mice, Firmicutes and Prevotella bacteria were increased, and the Bacteroidetes and Bacteroids and Pseudorella were decreased. Fecal microbiota transfers regulated these levels, and they increased the density of other bacteria types, and they showed both inorganic and organic salt metabolism in the intestinal flora of AD mice to be reversed. So the authors conclude that intestinal flora transplantation from mice with tumors into AD mice can actually reduce cognitive impairment. And the next paper, number two, is discussing the microbiome, and it is titled The Natural Dietary Compound Xanthohumol Regulates the Gut Microbiota and Its Metabolic Profile in a Mouse Model of Alzheimer's Disease. This is by first author Liu and last author Poi Min Hui. They're from the State Key Laboratory of Quality Research in Chinese Medicine, and this was published in the Molecules Journal. So these researchers were charged with finding new ways to target the microbiome, and they investigated the effect of xanthohumol, which is a flavonoid from the hops plant, on the intestinal flora diversity of the APP-PS1 mouse model. Using DNA sequencing techniques, they took 2-month-old mice and 6-month-old mice from that APP PS1 background compared to wild-type mice, and they were treated with a gavage with either corn oil or xanthohumol in corn oil every other day for 90 days. So before and after the treatment, the mice were tested for cognitive and memory function and spatial learning. So for those who are not familiar with the gavage technique that the last abstract used in this one, it's a way to administer an agent to an animal by opening their mouth and delivering a set volume of something right into their esophagus. Xanthohumol ended up reducing cognitive dysfunction in the APPPS1 mouse model in both age groups, and it also regulated the composition of their gut microbiota. So this indicated both a preventative, or before the onset of pathology in that 2-month group, and a therapeutic, or after the onset a pathology approach in that 6-month-old group. Sequencing revealed enrichment in gamma proteobacteria in the APPPS1 mice that were treated with xanthohumol compared to controls. And the authors suggest that these changes are modulated by different pathways such as penicillin and cephalosporin biosynthesis and atrazine degradation. The authors conclude that xanthohumol, taken orally, has the potential to be neuroprotective by regulating the gut microflora in a positive way. For the next abstract, number 3, we're moving into NF-kappa beta signaling. So in the Journal of Neurotoxicity Research, researchers from New Delhi, India, with the first author Hassan and last author Akhtar, worked to see if a phosphodiesterase inhibitor would improve cognitive performance in a sporadic Alzheimer's disease model in rats. Their abstract is titled Roflumilast Reduces Pathological Symptoms of Sporadic Alzheimer's Disease in Rats Produced by Intracerebroventricular Streptozotocin by Inhibiting NF-kappa beta base 1 mediated amyloid beta production in the hippocampus and activating the cyclic AMP BDNF signaling pathway. Phosphodiesterase inhibitors work to increase the levels of cyclic AMP, which is a molecule that helps in memory acquisition and in memory consolidation. The phosphodiesterase inhibitor that they used was called Roflumilast, or RFM for short, and they tested its effectiveness on the intracerebrovascular streptozotocin-induced model of sporadic AD. So basically, to induce this model of Alzheimer's disease, they took streptozotocin at 3 milligrams per kilogram. They gave it to rats in the intracerebroventricular route via stereotaxis. And then they dosed with the RFM, or the Roflumilast. And that was given orally for 15 days. Researchers found that RFM increased learning and memory in rats in the Morris water maze and a novel object recognition task. And it did so by enhancing cyclic AMP levels and brain-derived neurotrophic factors that also end up decreasing the glial fibrillary acidic protein and the NF-kappa beta levels in the hippocampus of these treated rats. So for the Alzheimer's disease rats, RFM slightly reduced inflammation, oxidative stress cholinergic impairments, GSK3 beta, phosphorylated tau levels, and neuroinflammation in the hippocampus. So to further support the conclusion that RFM helps alleviate neurological pathology, they did histological staining, and that showed reduced alterations in neurons and a reduced amyloid beta deposition in the hippocampus. So in summary, Roflumilast, or RFM, could be of use in the management of Alzheimer's disease pathology through NF-kappa beta base 1 inhibition, resulting in regulated amyloid beta production in the hippocampus. In the fourth abstract, which is titled The Protective Effects of Ginkgolide on a Cellular Model of Alzheimer's Disease via Suppression of the NF-kappa beta Signaling Pathway, from first author New and last author Liu, in the Journal of Applied Biochemical Biotechnology, these researchers from Capital Medical University in Beijing studied the mechanisms of NF-kappa beta signaling in an APPPS1 double gene transfected HEK293 cell line. That's kind of a mouthful, but researchers treated these cells with ginkgolide and they looked at cell viability and NF-kappa beta signaling. So additionally, Western blotting real-time PCR was executed to detect intracellular protein and mRNA expression of NF-kappa beta, I-kappa BA, BCL2, and VAX. And after dosing experiments, the best cell viability was actually achieved with the highest dose of ginkgolide after a 48-hour treatment, and that dosage was 100 micrograms per mil. So the supernatant levels of tumor necrosis factor alpha, IL-1 beta, and IL-6, which are inflammatory cytokines in this high dosage ginkgolide treatment group, were actually lower than those in the control group, suggesting that in addition to increasing cell viability, the ginkgolide treatment lowered inflammatory cytokine levels. And treated cells also had lower intracellular protein and mRNA expression of NF-kappa beta, P65, and Bax. On the other hand, the treated cells had higher protein and mRNA expression of I-kappa BA. So researchers conclude that ginkgolide is a promising prospect to increase cell viability, and they believe that this is achieved partially through suppression of the NF-kappa-beta signaling pathway via anti-apoptosis and anti-inflammatory mechanisms. So we're reaching a midpoint in this episode. I'll be right back after a few announcements from our team and our sponsors.
Hey, listeners, I'm here to let you know A-Minder is recruiting. If you're interested in joining us, shoot us an email at aminderpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
Nearly 1 million older Canadians live with a form of dementia. This number is expected to double within 10 years. And sadly, no solutions exist yet to dramatically reduce these numbers. It has to stop. Research can help solve this problem. We are 350 researchers fully dedicated towards preventing and finding a cure to dementia and to improve care to those living with dementia. We are the Canadian Consortium on Neurodegeneration and Aging. The solution to dementia could be closer than you think.
Welcome back. Continuing with the search for antioxidant and anti-inflammatory therapeutics to treat neurodegeneration, in our fifth abstract in our category of sexual dimorphism, researchers from Spain and Ireland published a study in Cells which aimed to target sex-based differences in microglial activation, which is typically increased in females with neurodegeneration. This paper is titled, "The Modulatory Effects of DMF on Microglia in Aged Mice Are Sex-Specific." And it is by first author Mila and last author Lynch. So dimethyl fumarate, or DMF, is used to treat psoriasis and remitting relapsing multiple sclerosis. And though its precise mechanism of action isn't really known, it can impact cellular metabolism, and it has antioxidant and anti-inflammatory properties. This is something the authors of this paper wanted to explore with a lens that is sensitive to sex differences. This is relevant considering that sexual dimorphism and microglia number, phenotype, and function extends across the lifespan and through most Alzheimer's disease models. Females typically experience a shift toward glycolysis with increased inflammatory cytokine production. Researchers treated 18-month-old mice with DMF for 1 month and assessed microglia from both male and female mice. So DMF treatment had a sex-specific effect on females by reducing glycolysis and impacting microglial morphology. Researchers conclude that one possible mechanism of action is its inactivation of glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate dehydrogenase, or GAPDH. Another study looking at sex-dependent effects of naturally occurring compounds comes from Spain, where a group of researchers wanted to understand how the Mediterranean diet can influence neuroinflammation outcomes. So our sixth abstract is called Mediterranean Natural Abstracts Improve Cognitive Behavior in Zebrafish and Healthy Rats and Ameliorated LPS-Induced Cognitive Impairment in a Sex-Dependent Manner. And this is by first author Puskidu and last author Basaga, published in Behavioral and Brain Functions. So please forgive me if I do not pronounce some of these names correctly. There is a lot of evidence that the Mediterranean diet, which largely consists of whole grains, vegetables, nuts, fruits, and herbs and spices native to the region, helps to influence the brain. Researchers were specifically interested in the herbs and spices from the Mediterranean and their impact on cognitive behavior in zebrafish and in rats. So they studied Mediterranean natural extracts of rosemary and the Glycyrrhiza glabra root. The adult zebrafish were exposed to rosemary and glycyrrhiza glabra root extract at 100 and 250 milligrams per liter dosing. Both treatments improved the memory in the T-maze test, but not during novel object recognition. Chronic administration in rats of rosemary and glycyrrhiza glabra root at 150 milligrams per kilogram improved spatial and retention memory during a Morris water maze test and an elevated plus maze test. And like zebrafish, there were no improvements during novel object recognition in the healthy male rats. After chronic treatment with lipopolysaccharide, which is a bacterial endotoxin, at 300 micrograms per kilogram, and rosemary through an oral dose, female rats experienced reversed LPS-induced cognitive deficits during water maze and elevated plus maze testing compared to those treated with LPS and not given rosemary. So the researchers conclude that Mediterranean extracts rescue an LPS-induced cognitive deficit, but only in females. Finally, they highlighted the utility of the zebrafish model in preclinical drug discovery within the field of neuroscience. So next, I want to finish with a few abstracts looking at some naturally occurring and pharmaceutical treatments. So abstract number 7 is another interesting one from Hangzhou, China, where researchers sought to supplement the common non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug aspirin to improve chronic inflammation associated with dementia. So this paper is called Combined Royal Jelly, 10-hydroxydecanoic acid, and aspirin has a synergistic effect against memory deficit and neuroinflammation. From the first author, Yu, and the last author, Hu, in the Food and Function Journal. And so as the title said, the alternative therapeutic treatment the researchers tried was royal jelly. So this ingredient of interest is 10-hydroxydecanoic acid, which is a fatty acid found in the honeybee product. Royal jelly attenuated NF-kappa beta activation and targeted the PTGS1 and 2 pathway. So PTGS1 and 2 are genes that encode COX-1 and COX-2, which are the targets of aspirin. And researchers found that put together, aspirin and 10-HDAA alleviate LPS-induced inflammation in BV2 cells, which is an immortalized microglial cell line. So this cell line had downregulation of nitric oxide, COX-2, and interleukin-6 compared to just getting the 10-HDAA, which is the royal jelly, or just aspirin treatment alone. So in the animal model, the combined treatment of both aspirin and 10-HDAA, or royal jelly, prevented the overactivation of glial cells and reduced mediators of inflammation. So the royal jelly ingredient worked to kind of soften the adverse effects that aspirin can have on the gut by reducing gastrointestinal injuries and microbiota dysbiosis. So not only are they using two therapeutics to target inflammation, but they seem to have a synergistic effect with one another to alleviate any ill effects of chronic aspirin use. So mice in the Morris water maze test had positive outcomes with both treatments after LPS-induced memory dysfunction. Each therapy alone had no effect. This abstract concludes that proposing royal jelly or 10-HDAA and aspirin combined is a way to treat AD and other neuroinflammatory diseases. Moving on to white matter damage and Alzheimer's disease, the next group of researchers from the Laboratory of Bioactive Substance and Function of Natural Medicines in Beijing, China, wanted to use crocin analogs as a potential therapeutic to go after white matter pathology. Abstract number 8 comes from the Food and Function Journal as well, and is titled Gardenia jasminoides, J. ellis extract, alleviated white matter damage through promoting the differentiation of oligodendrocyte precursor cells via suppressing neuroinflammation. The first author, Zhang, and last author, also Zhang with an H after the Z. So crocins are carotenoid chemicals that come from flowers like the gardenia. Analogs of this carotenoid are known as GJ4, or specifically the gardenia jasminoids J. ellis extract. I will just refer to this as GJ4 during this summary. GJ4 was shown to improve cognition in several mouse models of Alzheimer's disease, but the mechanisms by which it works are unclear. The researchers wanted to figure out the mechanism of action as it relates to white matter damage in the brain. The APP-PS1 mouse model has decreased myelin-related proteins, like myelin basic protein, myelin-associated glycoprotein, and myelin-associated oligodendrocyte basic protein. GJ4 treatment increased the expression of all of these proteins as measured by Western blotting and proteomics. These preliminary results indicate that this carotenoid treatment could improve injury to myelin and be a possible treatment to improve cognition. For further validation of this, a metabolite of GJ4 called quercetin was actually applied to cells in vitro. And this metabolite can pass through the blood-brain barrier, and it was found that quercetin treatment significantly promoted oligodendrocyte precursor cells to oligodendrocytes by upregulating Ki67 and transcription factor 2. They studied oligodendrocytes, of course, because these are the myelin-producing cells of the brain, and due to the oligodendrocyte neuron interactions, the researchers wanted to study the secondary effects on myelin and neurons, and they used lipophosphatidylcholine, or LPC, treated primary glial cultures, and they treated cultures with quercetin, and they used immunofluorescence to analyze and conclude that quercetin protected neurons and suppressed microglial activation in the presence of LPC. So again, that was lysophosphatidylcholine. So to conclude their study, researchers developed an LPC mouse model that was given GJ4. So GJ4 increased oligodendrocyte proliferation, differentiation, and most importantly, myelin repair. The research suggests that the Gardenia jasminoids JLS extract, or GJ4, can be a potential therapeutic for Alzheimer's disease and other diseases that affect white matter in the brain. Abstract 9 is moving to antioxidant research in our mini theme of using pharmaceutical compounds as therapeutic strategies. The next team of researchers from Canada sought to treat ischemic stroke and Alzheimer's disease with an antioxidant in a paper called Microglial Inflammation and Cognitive Dysfunction in Comorbid Rat Models of Striatal Ischemic Stroke and Alzheimer's Disease. Effects of antioxidant catalase SKL on behavioral and cellular pathology. First author McKenzie and last author Cachetto from the School of Medicine and Dentistry published in the Journal of Neuroscience and stated that ischemic stroke often occurs with Alzheimer's disease and can cause clinically worse outcomes for AD patients. And this is characterized as mixed dementia, where there are deficits in both the brain and the vasculature, because they have cognitive deficits from Alzheimer's disease pathology and also from stroke. So both stroke and AD drive neuroinflammation and further cognitive decline. And the authors used endothelin 1 injection in two rat models of Alzheimer's disease to induce ischemic stroke, and then they looked at motor function, memory, and microglial inflammation in the basal forebrain and striatum. Bilateral intercerebroventricular injections of amyloid beta 2535 were given to the early AD models and the prodromal AD model with the transgenic Fisher 344 rat overexpressing the human amyloid precursor protein. So that was the rat model that they used. Immunohistochemistry showed the early AD models, rats that were injected with amyloid and given ischemic stroke, had greatly increased microglial inflammation in the basal forebrain. And the prodromal AD model plus stroke rats had increased microgliosis in the striatum. The motor function of rats was assessed using a cylinder and walk beam test. Morse water maze was used for learning and memory, and these tests indicated balance alterations in both rat models and transient sensory motor defects in the amyloid beta injected rats. So both rat models also showed deficits in spatial reference in the Morse water maze test. The early AD model that was induced with those amyloid beta injections was treated with an antioxidant called CATSKL, or CATSKL. This treatment improved memory impairment in the basal forebrain and all of that microgliosis. The authors conclude that neuroinflammation could contribute to cognitive impairment as an early process of the interaction of Alzheimer's disease and stroke. And due to the improvements noted in microgliosis and memory, antioxidant therapies could be viable treatment options. And then out of South Korea, researchers from Suwon and Seoul teamed up to investigate therapeutic targets to the NLRP3 inflammasome. In Abstract 10, which is titled Novel Small Molecule Inhibitor of NLRP3 Inflammasome Reverses Cognitive Impairment in an Alzheimer's Disease Model, is by first author Haseeb and last author Choi in ACS Chemical Neuroscience. The NOD-like receptor family, pyrin domain containing 3 inflammasome, to which I will refer to as NLRP3, is abnormally activated in Alzheimer's disease. The researchers used a new small molecule inhibitor, which inhibits NLRP3-mediated activation of caspase-1. Caspase-1 also helps with the secretion of interleukin-1 beta, interleukin-18, and lactate dehydrogenase. So this small molecule inhibitor, called NLRP3 inhibitory compound 7, or NIC7, researchers used it to examine the effects on cognitive impairment and the expression of dopamine receptors and neuronal markers. So the use of NIC7 treatment reversed disease-associated symptoms in Alzheimer's disease mouse models, but not in models of psoriasis, which is another disease with abnormal NLRP3 activation. So they conclude that NIC7, which is the small molecule inhibitor of the NLRP3 pathway, targets aberrant activation of the NLRP3 inflammasomes, but can be not in psoriasis, but only in Alzheimer's disease. So it can be added to the list of potential therapeutics. And finally, the last abstract, number 11, in the Journal of Metabolic Brain Disease, researchers from the neurology department of the Qingdao University of China worked to uncover the role of caspase-1 in aging-related Alzheimer's-like neuropathology in a paper titled Inhibition of Caspase-1 Ameliorates Tauopathy and Rescues Cognitive Impairment of SAMP8 Mice. This abstract is by first author Tan MS and last author Tan L. During inflammasome assembly, caspase-1 cleavage and activity is increased in addition to the release of interleukin-1 beta, a cytokine that plays a role in Alzheimer's disease pathogenesis. So researchers used this SAMP8 mouse model, which has accelerated aging, to detect levels and activation of caspase-1 in varying ages. So they looked in mice at age 3, 7, and 11 months. In addition to the characterization of caspase-1 levels, they found VX-765, which is a selective inhibitor of caspase-1, to reduce tau hyperphosphorylation in the brains of SAMP8 mice in early stages of disease. So this compound, VX-765, also rescued spatial learning and memory impairments associated with the model, and they conclude the mechanism to be associated with interleukin beta-induced hypoactivation of tau kinases, leading to the reduction of hyperphosphorylated tau. Therefore, targeting caspase-1 may be fruitful to treat neurodegenerative tauopathies. All right, and that's it for today's episode. Thanks again for joining me, and I hope you enjoyed it. Remember to check out the numbered bibliography in the show notes so that you can dive deeper into any of today's papers. And if the link isn't showing up in your podcast app, you can also find the show notes at aminder.com. And if you like today's episode or this topic, you might be interested in other episodes covering a wide range of topics within neurodegenerative disease. We release episodes every Monday and Friday for each monthly series. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us on social media, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. So just search for Aminder Podcast and you'll find us. And you can also contact us by email at aminderpodcast@gmail.com. So here at Aminder, we work really hard to bring you these monthly updates, and we really want to reach as many ears as possible that would benefit from this free resource. One thing that we really could use help with to reach more people is leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or whatever your favorite podcast app is. Every review really helps, and we appreciate it a lot. So thank you in advance for helping us spread the word. And if you're interested in getting involved with our podcast, you can also send us an email at aminderpodcast@gmail.com with your CV, your interest, and we'll get back to you soon. And we have an amazing team of volunteers that puts the show together every month. So thank you so much to the sorting team for dividing all the papers from this month into bite-sized topics. And thank you to Sarah for reviewing this script. Thank you for the editors for putting together this show, for making the bibliography and also the word clouds associated with it. And the music that you've heard today is from Anusha Kamesh, fellow Aminder host and editing manager. And if you would like to hear more, you can find her on SoundCloud under her name or YouTube under AK Music. And we really hope that you found today's episode useful and accessible. And we will talk to you again soon. Bye.